And now it's time for Active Voice Radio. Welcome back here to Active Voice Radio This Week. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. More information about our program is available online at activevoiceradio.com. We're looking ahead at bringing you some really wonderful authors here on the program in late October and early November. One I'm really looking forward to is James Schwartz on his book, In Pursuit of the Gene, From Darwin to DNA. I just got the book from the publisher, and I'll read it up before I interview James next week. We'll be presenting that interview for you in the first week of November here on Active Voice Radio. That'll be the first week you can actually get the book in public. Again, that's In Pursuit of the Gene, From Darwin to DNA. We have some great social justice voices joining us in the holiday season this year in November and December. So look out for some great programming here on Active Voice Radio. This week, as promised, I bring you a piece of a panel I heard in San Francisco just a few weeks ago. It was at the National Normal Conference, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, and they presented a panel called Putting the Mexican Cartels Out of Business. Last week, we heard the pre-speech to that panel by former Seattle Police Chief Norm Stamper about his experience with prohibition. This week, we've got an important voice for you, one who will be right here in New Mexico from November 11th to the 14th. Tonight, we hear from Ethan Nadelman, the director of the Drug Policy Alliance here in America. Ethan, you'll see Ethan on CNN. You'll see him on Fox. You'll see his writing on the Huffington Post. He is one of the most recognized authorities on ending prohibition in this country. Now, Mexico decriminalized minor marijuana possession just this year. And putting the Mexican cartels out of business, and in the context of this panel, it means putting them out of business by legalizing marijuana here in the United States. So here's Ethan Nadelman, the director of the Drug Policy Alliance, on the Putting the Cartels Out of Business panel at the National Normal Conference.
Hey, thank you, Richard. I appreciate that. Yeah, the LaRoucheites, they've taken to following me around a bit. Berkeley, Cato. I started my speech at Cato a few months ago by saying, oftentimes think that my liberal friends think I'm really a libertarian. My libertarian friends think I'm really a liberal. And LaRoucheites think I'm actually the illegitimate child of George Soros and Queen Elizabeth. But, so be that as it may. What I thought would be most useful is really to provide just a political analysis here. I mean, and it's a political analysis without any major punchlines, because I'm really trying to figure this thing out as I go, and I'm spending a lot of time thinking about it and trying to figure it out. The punchline in some respects, of course, is obvious. It's what Richard was suggesting, which is that the best way to deal with Mexico's problems of prohibition-related violence is the way we dealt with prohibition-related violence in Chicago during the days of Al Capone, which is essentially to end drug prohibition. I mean, that's kind of goes without saying in a way. If these drugs, in fact, were legal, Mexico would not play a particular role. I mean, they're not the lowest cost producer of these things. They are, there's no great domestic tradition around the production of these things. So Mexico would more or less be removed from this business. And that would resolve the violence. I mean, there are people more and more who are saying, well, if you legalize this stuff, what will the gangsters do then? Won't they just go into other sorts of crimes, kidnapping, other sorts of things? And the truth is, yes, of course, some of them will, as the mob went into Las Vegas and gambling with the repeal of alcohol prohibition. But the fact of the matter is, they're going to go into those other things anyway. And you didn't need to repeal alcohol prohibition for the mob to have the incentive to go into Las Vegas with gambling. And you don't need to repeal drug prohibition for the Mexican mobs to go into other sorts of activities. And in fact, if you look in some places like Colombia, the point when the drug traffickers were at their most powerful in the late 80s and early 90s was also the period when kidnappings were the most extensive. And as the drug traffickers became relatively disempowered, You didn't see them branching out wildly in other areas. Maybe they're doing that somewhat, and maybe they were going to do it anyway. But you actually saw a reduction in crime, because simply ending the prohibition removes from their coffers billions, if not tens of billions of dollars. It disempowers them. It removes their riches. It means they no longer can bribe and pay for things and outpay the government for all sorts of things. So this notion, I'm just trying to say the arguments against it in Mexico, when I hear this, and this one's coming up a lot, it seems to me that's not a persuasive argument. Not a persuasive argument. So, you know, the punchline is going to be, of course, end the prohibition. That's what's going to do it for Mexico. But as you and I know, that ain't happening very soon. And there's the marijuana piece of this thing, and then there's the rest of this thing. I should say, first of all, you know, I was struck. I mean, many of you may have seen, around Christmas time, right, around Christmas time, the Attorney General of Arizona, Terry Goddard, fairly conservative guy, his father was governor, he wants to be governor, and he came out and he said, you know, I'm not saying we should legalize marijuana, he goes, but we need a debate on legalizing marijuana because the Mexican drug gangsters are making half their money or more from the marijuana business. And I don't know where he got that number from, but the drug czars use that number. I find it hard to believe that all the heroin, the transshipment of cocaine and methamphetamine, that marijuana counts for over half. But Richard made some good points about the magnitude of this trade. We also don't know if that counts the Mexican growers, you know, in the state and national forests in California, what have you. But nonetheless, the fact that the drug czar, former drug czar, was saying it, the fact that the Arizona Attorney General was saying it, seemed to me a compelling thing. And when he came to D.C. to testify, he didn't totally back away. He didn't reiterate it, but he's made clear that he thinks this debate is important to happen. And then a week or two later, the City Council of El Paso, you know, they, some of you, I think you all know this, right? In January of 2000 of this year, the City Council of El Paso, eight people, passed a resolution asking Congress to initiate a debate on drug legalization, saying we're not for it, but please initiate this debate, and we're asking to do this because of our concerns about what's happening just across the border in Ciudad Juarez. Now, what happened was right away the mayor, you know, came right back. He called the city council a bunch of potheads. The congressman, Reyes, who used to be the head of Border Patrol, he said, if you keep pushing this stuff, the feds are going to cut off money for El Paso. Just shut up. So the city council backed down, but they did then pass a resolution for saying, let's have a meeting about this. Let's have a conference about this thing. And I went to that conference on Monday and Tuesday with Craig Reinerman and I think a few others who are here as well. And I have to say, it was really quite fascinating. I mean, first of all, it was the first conference I've been to in a border city dealing with this. It was also, you know, when sometimes you read in the newspapers how terrible a city is, and then you go there and people say, oh, don't worry about it. That's what, you know, most of the city's safe. But in El Paso, people were saying, it is really bad. It is really bad. We are not going over. I met the president of the University of Texas in El Paso. She said she hasn't been across the border in a year. People who routinely would go across every day, it really is a very serious situation. And sure, there are safe neighbors, you can go this and that, but people really are freaked out. They're really scared. We went over to Juarez. I actually had never crossed the border right there like that and come over, you know. And so you see the whole thing. And it was actually quite inspirational in a way because we went to see a speech by Sergio Fajardo. Sergio Fajardo is the mayor, former mayor of Medellin. You know, Medellin in Colombia was one where Pablo Escobar was the king for a while. And it was a place where the traffickers ran the place. Now, they may still run the place, but Medellin has quieted down enormously. There's been amazing development. Some of the Colombian cities have been fantastic in terms of their economic development. And the Sergio Fajardo is now going to be running in the next presidential election in Colombia against Uribe, probably, the president. And it was, you could see that in Juarez, there's such a sense of kind of hopelessness. And going to this meeting, the big conference center, maybe 2,000 people there, sort of the bourgeoisie of Juarez, and they had invited the mayor of Medellin because, in a way, he's their role model. And Medellin's the role model of the city that was dominated by the traffickers, racked by violence, but somehow has, you know, managed to get its stuff together, has reduced poverty, reduced violent crime by 80% to 90%, you know, come together. Now, mind you, he did not talk about legalization at this meeting, although he has in the past raised the issue. He has in the past raised the issue. And what you see is more and more people at least raising this issue, putting it on the agenda. Now, what struck me, I should say, in El Paso, because this is not just a Mexico issue, this is a border issue, El Paso doesn't have tons of violence, But what struck me, when I think about our evolving drug policy reform movement, you think more and more people across the spectrum are coming into this. You see also African Americans beginning to play more and more leadership roles, not so much in the marijuana reform movement, but the broader drug law reform movement. But Latinos, Hispanics have been noticeably absent from this. It's just not there. You don't hear it. I can't think of prominent Latino politicians speaking out to this thing. But in El Paso, I saw it and I heard it. Middle class, upper middle class, conservative people on the faculty, whatever, say, what do you think the answer is? And they'll go, well, you know, I think we should legalize it. Hesitantly, as if they're expecting to be yelled at, and then realizing, in fact, that, you know, they're in good company. A prosecutor there, once again, Hispanic prosecutor in El Paso, saying the same sort of thing, need to talk about decriminalization. So something's happening in El Paso. It's the opposite, by the way, of San Diego. I mean, here you have these two border cities, and San Diego is pathetic. I mean, San Diego is a right-wing reactionary. You see what's happening with medical marijuana there. You know, if there was a way to get Bonnie Dumanis, that miserable district attorney, out of office, that would be a fantastic step forward in the fight for justice and decency in the state of California. And I think, in fact, if you look back at when that Mexican decriminalization law was proposed under Vicente Fox's government and the Congress was moving forward and passed the thing, and then all of a sudden there was this hullabaloo, a lot of that hullabaloo came out of San Diego. It came out of people like Dumanis and others saying, oh, my God, Mexico's giving up on the drug war. We got to yell and scream. And Fox vetoed that decriminalization back a few years ago. But San Diego, you see nothing happening, really. Maybe the beginnings. I'm going to go there in a couple of months, and I see one of the elite institutes wants to take on this issue. I'll be there with the former head of DEA, Bonner, and debating him on this issue. But it's not what you saw. What I saw in El Paso was a place where people felt that that essentially El Paso and Juarez were really one city in a way, and that this drug war, this craziness, has really destroyed what they knew and loved in life. For those people who grew up just routinely crossing the border, they've seen something destroyed. And therefore, there's a radicalism and a way of thinking afresh going on along that border that I'd not previously seen. It was inspiring for me to see that there. And the city council, this young guy, Beto O'Rourke, you know, in his 30s, he's the one who led the charge on this thing. And, I mean, I got to tell you, and as he said in his talk, he goes, you know, the 8 members of city council, you can't get us to agree on anything. Nothing. What time the garbage should be picked up. What, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, all 8 of us agreed on passing this resolution calling on Congress to initiate a debate. And the mayor, funny guy, I mean, the guy's there, is tall, you know, his thing, the mayor of El Paso, is he plays the guitar and sings folk songs. So whenever he gives, and look, he's up at this academic conference, political conference, and he goes, okay, let me finish off with a song. And he gets up singing some folksy cowboy song or something. You wonder. But even he was kind of saying, yes, I realize now we need an open debate, blah, 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 blah. You know, I mean, so you see an opening there and a determination to follow up and keep this stuff going. I hope it can leak in to the other border cities. Now, with Mexico specifically, just to provide a little context, Mexico has been providing marijuana to the United States for at least a century. I think most of you are aware, well, thank you, I don't think that anybody was ever overly impressed by the quality of the marijuana they were providing to the United States. I mean, although there was Acapulco gold at some point, but I mean, you know, but they have been providing that for a long time. And as you know, it goes back in their culture, not in the majority culture, but in significant. We also know that if you ask about the origins of the marijuana laws in the United States, it was in the teens and the 20s. It was about discrimination against Mexican Americans, Mexican migrants, coming up here, taking good jobs from the good white people, you know, and then going back, smoking up a little of that funny smoking, you know, funny smelling reefer cigarette, and people freaked out. I think El Paso, maybe roughly around 1913 or 14, was right after Utah in passing, I think, the first anti-marijuana prohibition laws in the United States. So it was very clearly about prejudice and discrimination against the Mexicans. And what's remarkable is the extent to which Mexican-Americans and Mexicans don't know that. I mean, I think the more we let Mexicans and Mexican-Americans, Latinos, know that that is the origins of the marijuana laws, like the origins of the anti-opium laws of the Chinese, like the anti-cocaine laws in blacks, it's important for people to understand that history, to understand the illegitimacy of the origins of these laws, and to understand the racist origins of these laws.
We're listening to Ethan Nadelman, the director of the Drug Policy Alliance in America, on the Putting the Mexican Cartels Out of Business panel at the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws conference here on Active Voice Radio tonight. More information at activevoiceradio.com.
So Mexico's been shipping this stuff forever and ever and ever. They've provided, nobody knows what percent, of course. Is it 10%, 30%, 40%, a bigger share in the West, not as much in the East, what have you, been competition with the Canadians, American growers. So nobody really knows how much of it is now money, marijuana being grown in the parks up in California and where the proceeds are going back to Mexico. We don't really know that. But with opium, too, by the way, Mexico's been producing opium since, I believe, the 19th century. They have been a reliable supplier of about a quarter to a third of all the heroin consumed in the United States for many, many decades. There was the Herrera family shipping it up to Chicago for many decades. Now many other gangs as well. They grow it there domestically for many years. It's decades now that the Mexican army has devoted roughly a third of all its resources, I think, to the opium and marijuana eradication campaigns. This is a long history. You know, Afghanistan provides 90% of the world's heroin. But in the United States, we get almost none of our heroin from Afghanistan. We get it from Colombia and Mexico. That's our principal sources on this stuff. And nobody sees that stuff really getting eradicated. I mean, it's there. It's going to be happening. That's that. A long history. And the thing is, there's been the corruption there forever as well. I mean, I was talking recently with some very prominent former very high-level Mexican official, very high-level, I've become friendly with, and also with a former very high-level Latino Hispanic-American diplomat who's also beginning to come around to our side on these things. And they're both sort of saying a lot of the same thing. They're saying, you know something, with this corruption, part of what's going on, he goes, this has been true forever and ever, that in most of the major cities and states in the north of Mexico, you could not become mayor or governor unless you had an understanding with the local gangsters, the key guys in town. And that hasn't really changed, right? And they'll say that what's happened, of course, is the level of violence and the level of money coming into this, especially with the transshipment coming from Colombia with the methamphetamine and all this sort of stuff. And what also has changed with Calderon's kind of indiscriminate attack. It's not that he didn't need to crack down on this stuff, but that he did it in a way that seemed to be lacking in strategic focus. If you're going to crack down on major gangster organizations, given the fact that they're making billions from this business, you have to do it strategically, and he did not do so. And their prediction, by the way, about what's going to happen, and some of this was already before the recent midterm elections. He said, let me tell you what's going to happen. You know, the PRI, the Mexican Institutional Revolutionary Party, ruled Mexico like the Japanese Liberal Democrats. You know, it's a democracy, but one-party rule basically for over half a century. Finally, Vicente Fox took them out. You know, Calderon succeeded Fox, right? But the PRI, the old ruling party, won the midterm elections just a month or two ago. And the assumption is that the PRI is going to win the next presidential election. And what are they going to do? They're going to reinstitute the old understanding. I mean, it's basically going to be let the business continue, stop killing, stop shooting. You're never going to stop this stuff. Marijuana, all these other drugs are part of global commodities markets. You're not going to get rid of this stuff. Let's just reduce the violence. Some people think what happened in Medellin, it's not you got rid of the mobsters, right? What happened is one guy finally takes over. And he takes over, stability emerges, and then they reach an accommodation with a local political system. Can't prove this, but that's generally the supposition. The supposition about what's going to happen in Tijuana and Juarez and other border cities, once again, one of the gangster organizations is going to take over, wipe out the other side, and you're going to have basically a pox mafiosa. Right, a peace ordained by the mob in partnership with local government, and at least the killing will stop, the drugs will continue to flow. Sometimes I look at Colombia, and what's the example of Colombia? You know, Plan Colombia, what was Plan Colombia? Plan Colombia, introduced by Barry McCaffrey, the former drug czar who previously had been head of SOUTHCOM, the American military force in South America. Plan Colombia was an anti-insurgency, a counter-insurgency strategy marketed to the Congress and the public as a counter-drug strategy. Because what McCaffrey and others realized in the late 90s was that Americans would not support sending troops and billions of dollars to fight communists, but they would do it to fight drugs. And McCaffrey basically marketed that way. And to some extent, I'll tell you, Plan Colombia, to some extent, has succeeded. because it succeeded in more or less diminishing the power of the FARC, the left-wing guerrillas. It somewhat diminished the power of the right-wing paramilitaries, which are also violent there. It more or less empowered the Colombian military. There are higher levels of peace and security in Colombia. And the drugs continue to flow. Right? Plan Colombia was not ever really about stopping the flow of drugs, because you can't stop the flow of drugs because these are global commodity markets, and because if you push down one place, it pops up someplace else. Right? But it did create more stability in the country. Right? Uribe is massively popular with his population, and the United States government, because Uribe gives the U.S. the rhetoric they want and all this sort of stuff, you know, nobody's yelling or screaming. There's major human rights abuses, there's other problems, but. And one of the questions with Plan Merida in Mexico is whether or not that's also perhaps a model there. I mean, I know there's a lot of ambivalence among my allies in Mexico regarding this stuff. Is Plan Merida the right model? Is this a way for the Mexican government to reassert authority while the drugs just continue to flow because you can't really stop it? I'm not sure. Dick's giving me the warning on the time, so I'm just going to flag a couple of points, and I had planned for a longer talk and just me taking up during the questions here. The first one is, we have twice before closed the border, under Nixon, and then again it was either Reagan or Bush with Commissioner Von Raab. Wonderful book called Operation Intercept by Lawrence Guberman assessed the impact of the first crackdown, and he found that what it did was it reduced the flow of marijuana and increased the flow of heroin because those drugs were more compact and easier to smuggle. The second point I want to pick up a little later on is this Latin American Commission. The commission chaired by former presidents Cardoso of Brazil, Gaviria of Colombia, and Zedillo of Mexico, commission I've been deeply involved in from the origins to helping frame it to testifying before the commission in Bogota to helping publicize the thing globally. It's crucially important because what they did in that commission was they said a number of things that no high-level commission had ever said before. They said that part of the problem here is not just drug trafficking, but the problems of punitive prohibition, and they use the word punitive prohibition. Never use the word legalized, but use the phraseology punitive prohibition. They supported harm reduction, which you had not seen coming out of Latin America before. They supported the decriminalization of marijuana and left vague whether they meant legalization or actual decriminalization the way we mean it. And they talked about breaking the taboo on open debate and dialogue, and they talked about a shift in a paradigm in drug policy. All new stuff that's continuing to reverberate in very important ways. When President Fox popped out a few months ago and started saying legalization may be the only answer in the long term, I think he was echoing what they were saying. I want to talk more about during the Q&A. And the last thing, which Richard referred to, this recent, and this will I'll finish with Richard, this legislation that just came through, it is a mixed bag, right? I mean, on the one hand, it's got really good stuff in it, which is basically the ending of criminalization for possession of very small amounts of 5 grams of cannabis, half a gram of cocaine, other drugs in very small amounts, without any demand that people go to treatment even if they don't have a drug problem. Also recognizing the traditional uses of drugs like peyote. Very good once again. Emphasizing treatment instead of incarceration for people with real problems. Very good. But on the other side, the amounts are so low, 5 grams of cannabis, 0.5 grams of cocaine, a few lines, that anybody caught over with that now may be subject to more intensive penalties, right? So this could increase the opportunities of corruption. It could increase the number of people in the criminal justice system. I thought it was important because perception oftentimes matters as much or more than reality, that when this Mexican law came out and our Mexican allies were saying, look, don't oversell this, it's got a lot of problems, my view on this thing was, let's make people aware of the limitations, but let's emphasize the positive. Because when the American media picks up on the decriminalization in Mexico and the Argentine Supreme Court decision also decriminalizing possession, all of a sudden articles start appearing all over the major media about the shift coming in Latin America, that Latin America is changing, the debate is opening up. Right now, the media has always been such a problem for us. We feel there's real momentum and they don't feel it. Now, in some respects, the media almost seems like there's more momentum. I mean, I feel like the media is overselling the progress we're making, and I'm grateful they're doing that. I'm grateful they're doing that because perception oftentimes is reality. And so I think that's, you know, Fortune Magazine and New York Magazine and Texas Monthly this week and what's going on in Mexico and AP and New York Times and everything else, when they're up about the wave, what's happening right now, I mean, let's us not become naive about this. We know the battle that lies ahead. We know that 60% of all Americans supported legalizing marijuana for medical purposes in 1996, and now 13 years later, we still only have 13 states and Congress won't barely talk about it. We understand what we're up against. So we have to understand that while we keep aiming and pushing for this whole thing to come crumbling down fast, let's be aware this could be a long struggle. But if the media is going to oversell our progress, God bless them. I'll take your questions later.
We just heard Ethan Nadelman, the director of the Drug Policy Alliance. You'll see him frequently in news, and he's a well-known writer on the topic. He was speaking there on the Putting the Mexican Cartels Out of Business panel at the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws conference that took place in September, just a few weeks ago, in San Francisco, California. The Drug Policy Alliance is having their annual conference in Albuquerque this November, the 11th to the 14th. More information about that conference online at drugpolicy.org.
About the good things, about the bad things, about the right things, about the wrong thing. The lady before you leave me, be locked, and I'm the one who love you. Think about the sacrifices that I made for you. Think about the hard times that I spent for you. Think about the good things that I've done for you. Think about the bad things I tried not to do. Some are sugar and drink, yeah. About the good things, about the bad things, about the right things, about the wrong things. Later before you leave me, be lost.
James Brown, get us thinking here on Active Voice Radio tonight. Some great sort of fall music for the evening here, too. Let's get thinking about all of this. And we bring you voices that make you think here on Active Voice Radio. Very much looking forward to some of the voices, including James Schwartz on his book, In Pursuit of the Gene from Darwin to DNA. That's coming up for you here in the next couple of weeks on Active Voice Radio. Everyone, thanks for listening to the program tonight. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. More information about our show available online at activevoiceradio.com. Everyone, have a wonderful week.